the new theater of the mind. The Clown Prince of Doom. The Bruce Collins Show, daring to take radio past the point of no return.
Welcome back to the Bruce Collins Show. We're very glad to have you join us. This week, we talk about a very controversial subject. Our guest this week claims that there is no country other than the United States that has nuclear weapons. He is Ralph Epperson. The Bruce Collins Show airs every Friday night at WWPR 1490 AM. You can listen to past archives by going to ipbn-fm.com. That's ipbn-fm.com. There's a banner there just for the Bruce Collins Show. Click on that banner and you will be led right to the Bruce Collins Show page. The Bruce Collins Show also has a Facebook page. Visit the Bruce Collins Show Facebook page, like us there, and catch up on all the news surrounding the Bruce Collins Show. You can email the program at bruce_collins_show@aol.com. Drop us a line and let us know how you're doing. The Bruce Collins Show also has a YouTube channel. Visit YouTube, search for the Bruce Collins Show channel, subscribe and catch all the latest shows on YouTube. Again, our guest this week has a very controversial notion. He claims that there is no other country other than the United States that has nuclear weapons. He is legendary conspiratorial historian Ralph Epperson. In a moment. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bruce Collins at The Bruce Collins Show. Thank you so much for joining us each and every week, Fridays at midnight on WWPR 1490 AM. We would ask that you would support all of your favorite charities that help to spread the gospel, clothe the needy, and feed the hungry. You can do that as thanks for listening to our program. We ask of no monetary payback from you, only your listenership and your dedication to making the world a better place. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoy the show. Just wanted to let all friends of the Bruce Collins Show and the Revolving Door Radio Program know that Chad Miles is the webmaster at Conspiria.net. Check out Conspiria.net today. And joining us once again this week, it's my honor to welcome back Ralph Epperson. Ralph Epperson is a historian, author, and lecturer who has been researching the conspiratorial view of history. Now, the conspiratorial view of history is the view that the major events of the past have been planned years in advance by a central conspiracy. Ralph's been researching that for 50 years. He has written or produced 4 best-selling books. They are entitled The Unseen Hand, The New World Order, Masonry, Conspiracy Against Christianity, and Jesse James, United States Senator. He's also written 6 booklets and 15 DVDs. He is a graduate of the University of Arizona, but freely admits that what he has learned since graduation has taught him that most of what he learned in college in history and political science simply is not true. He proudly states that his research has proven to him that there has been an active conspiracy in the world planning major wars, depressions, and inflations years in advance. Many of those who have read his material and viewed his DVDs state that they are the best in the market on this subject. If you want to know how this conspiracy has operated in the world from one of the best researchers into the reality of this conspiracy, and he is one of the best teachers and writers, you will want to obtain some or all of Ralph Epperson's materials. And you can find out more information about Ralph Epperson at ralph-epperson.com. Again, that's ralph-epperson.com. Now, Ralph, I understand this week you want to talk about no nukes. Is that right?
That's correct, Bruce. I'm going to try to show you, after about 30 years of researching this, that I believe there's evidence that the only nation with nuclear weapons is the United States. No other nation, Russia, China, North Korea, France, England, even Israel, none of these nations have nuclear weapons, none. And I'm going to also contend that Iran will never, ever get nuclear weapons, never. They might claim to have them, but I can guarantee you they'll never have one. And we'll try to explain to you why that I believe that's true.
Well, Ralph, have at it.
You're very kind. Let's start now. Let me share just briefly that I've been doing this for 30 years at least. I put out a DVD, or it was a video at the time, called The Russian Missiles... Russia, right, it was called Russia Has Wooden Missiles back in around 1990. And that was about 2 hours long. I expanded it to a 3-hour DVD called Only the U.S. Nukes. And that's on the internet, I believe. And if not, you could go to my website and get a copy and watch it yourself. But I'm convinced, absolutely convinced that I'm right. No nation has nukes except the United States. Now, I'd like to start with, Bill Clinton. You say, why with him? Well, I'll try to explain. Little Billy Clinton, as you remember, became president in 1992 and was inaugurated in 93. Little Billy Clinton, on the night of July the 16th, 1992, gave a speech when he accepted the nomination, and he praised two men for getting him into politics. One was John Kennedy, and the other was Dr. Carol Quigley, a professor he had at Georgetown. That's what he said. Now, those words are quoted in his book entitled Putting People First on page 231, so confirm what I just said. So now we say, well, we all know who John Kennedy was, but who was this Dr. Carol Quigley? Well, let me tell you. Bill Clinton went to Georgetown from 64 to 68. And 4 years, and then graduated, and then we'll cover that in a minute. So he graduated. But so while he was there, Dr. Quigley, who was his major professor, wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope. It's like 1,300 pages long, very boring, tedious work. But there are some real revelations in there, and we're going to read a couple of them to show you that Bill Clinton is not a conspiracy theorist. He's a conspiracy realist. He knows for certain it is there, and they were the ones who made him president. Now, I'm going to go to page 950 of Tragedy and Hope. Now, I'm going to read one paragraph, and I'm hoping you'll trust me. I have a DVD on the internet called Clinton's Conspiracy. You can watch and see the documentation that I'm going to cover, and of course, more of it's about an hour and a half long. This will be maybe 5 minutes. Here's what he wrote on page 950, Dr. Quigley. There does exist and has existed for a generation. Now, generation is around 20 years, so 1996 minus around 40 years means 1920, 25, something in that neighborhood. An international Anglophile network which operates to some extent in the way the radical right believes the communists act. In fact, this network, which we may identify as the Round Table Groups, has no aversion to cooperating with the communists or any other group, and frequently does so. Now, he went on in the next couple sentences. I'll just abbreviate, make it brief. He says that he was made privy to their papers for 2 years, and that means they wanted him to research this because of his background and his previous books that he's written. And so he did, and when he did, he published them, Macmillan published it. It's a major publishing company. So that means this conspiracy wanted this book out. And the reason I believe they did, this is my theory, was they were trying to get the liberals to read it and learn that there's something going on and they better choose up sides. And they were hoping they'd choose up the side with Dr. Quigley. Now, that's a theory. But it got into the hands of the right wing when Cleon Skousen, a former professor at BYU, wrote a book called The Naked Capitalist, which was a review of this book. It's probably 100 or 150 pages long, and he does a great job of detailing far more than we're covering now. And that, by the way, there was a lawsuit because he was claiming it was plagiarism, and all we know is that they settled out of court, which I don't know what that means, whether he lost or not. But anyway, notice, Quigley taught Clinton there was an international Anglophile, meaning primarily English, network. Now let's go to page 324. And by the way, we know that Clinton had to read this because this book was required reading for Quigley's course, it says. Okay, now, the powers of financial capitalism, that's his way of describing this conspiracy, had another far-reaching aim, nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. This system was to be controlled by the central banks of the world acting in concert by secret agreements arrived at in frequent private meetings and conferences. Now, I'm going to infer, in fact, it's actually more than that, that Quigley taught Clinton there was an international conspiracy already in control of the world. That means they control the small nations, the medium-sized ones, and even the United States, because we have a central bank called the Private Reserve. It's, some people mistakenly call it the Federal Reserve, but I call it what it is, the Private Reserve. Okay, now, if that's true, if they're in charge, let's use the example of Iran. Iran's oil is owned by the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. The Anglo part means a British oil company. And it's been identified as British Petroleum. Now, it was British Petroleum that had that huge leak in the Gulf oil, what, a couple of years ago, whenever it was. Mm-hmm. So we now know they're the ones that own 50% of Iran's oil. Now, that means that this conspiracy wants them there to own the oil, and they own the oil fields, and they're going to allow the Iranian government to get a nuclear weapon. Why would they do that? Let's say that Israel does have nuclear weapons, and they decide to launch several nuclear weapons on Israel. Israel's going to launch their missiles, and both nations lose, including the Anglo-Iranian oil company. They lose their oil fields. But they're in charge. If you're in charge, you're in charge. Why would they allow Iran to get a nuclear weapon? That should be by itself enough evidence. There's no nation in the world, the United States, we American companies own a good percentage of the capital goods in Russia. We're going to nuke these oil, these buildings and refineries and electrical stations and railroads and buildings and businesses in a nuclear war when these people work so hard to acquire it and own it and get profits out of it? I don't think so. It doesn't make sense. Here they control the Russian government, and they're going to let them get nuclear weapons to nuke America and destroy their assets here, and we're going to destroy their assets in Russia? Does that make any sense to anybody? These people are many things, but the one thing I must admit after 50 years of research, they're not stupid. So they're not going to let Russia have nuclear weapons. They're not going to let Iran have nuclear weapons. North Korea, China, you name it. And by the way, in my 3-hour DVD called Only the U.S. Nukes, I prove there are, further prove, there are no nukes in Russia, China, North Korea, etc. None. Zip. Zero. Now let me give you two more evidence that are very similar to this issue. We've been told by the Cold War, our own government, that the Russians had, during the Cold War, 15 or 19,000 nuclear warheads and the missiles to launch them. ICBMs. And we've got bombers and anti-missile things, and we've got nuclear warheads and missiles, and we're going to launch if you launch. In fact, Reagan came up with the thing called MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction, which means if you launch, we launch. But wait a minute. If this conspiracy controls both nations, why would they want it destroyed in a nuclear war? Does that make sense?
No.
I don't think so. Why? Why would they want it? Bruce, you got an answer? Take a shot at it.
I don't know. That doesn't make sense, like you said.
It doesn't fit. They spend all the billions of dollars to acquire all these rights and privileges, and they control governments and both governments, the Russian and our government, and then they're going to let them have a nuclear war and destroy all that? I don't believe so. Number two. The Russians had, I don't know, 15 or 19,000 nuclear warheads. In my DVD, I have a picture taken from Soviet Life magazine, which was the life magazine for the Soviet Union, Russia. And in this big picture, it's taken from the balcony. You can see people, as I remember, sitting in the balcony and then on the floor and then goes to the platform. Like in a theater, it's across the side, the whole width of the building. And there in the front of it stands Gorbachev lecturing or speaking, and behind him, I would bet, are 500 or more communists, probably the Politburo or maybe the generals. Now, the Russian people hated communism. Well, why was there no revolution? Because, as you know, the Russian people lost their arms after the communists took over. There's no weapons. But there are weapons. There's 15, let's just use the word number 15,000. It only would take one general in a very unpopular government over them, would take one general, doesn't need a revolution, doesn't need other generals. All he does is go down to the basement, reprograms one missile that was going to be launched on the United States, and launch it on Moscow, and communism ends. That's never happened. Why? Why? If the Russian people hate it, why don't they overthrow it? Well, they've got no weapons, but they do have weapons. And it would only take one man, one general with the courage to do it, and he could do it, and it was over. And that never happened. Why? And the reason is Russia has no nuclear weapons, and the Russian generals know that. Now, another quick story. I was in the Dallas airport, and when you go to the Dallas airport, you walk from Terminal A to Terminal D, and it takes at least 3 days, I think, to get there. So I'm walking there pulling my little onboard carry thing, and I hear as I'm walking by, this is gate number 27, and we're loading flight to Mazatlan, Mexico. And I say, oh, man, I want to go to Mazatlan. I don't want to go to Topeka to deliver this boring speech of mine. So I stopped in the middle of the aisle between the terminals on either side, and I turned around and looked, and there are the people standing in line already to board the airline. And just by coincidence, I noticed a very famous American senator. I'm not going to name him because I'll tell you why in a second. But I'm not going to identify, I'll tell you why. But anyway, he's standing in line. I said, oh, good, he's got his wife and children. They're going for a vacation. I said, no, he's by himself. Oh, I said, he must be with his aides. He's got, you know, five aides. They're going down for a staff meeting or maybe a meeting with other whatever government officials. And he was by himself. He's pulling his own carry-on luggage. So I said, wait a minute now. The Bilderberg... Maybe he's going to a Bilderberg meeting. They always choose a resort, someplace somewhat isolated where they're safe. And I said, you know something? It would take one general who could nuke 300 of the world's leading powers, government officials, leaders, dictators, tyrants, businessmen, generals, etc., 300 at one time, and there's been Bilderberg meetings once a year for probably 60 years. I don't know, something like that. Why have they never been nuked? And secondly, why didn't this senator say, I'm not going to go. They could nuke me when I get there. He's not doing that. I'm going to Mazatlan. Now, I later found out, I checked to see there was no Bilderberg meeting. But even if there was, let's go back. Why didn't he fear getting nuked? Because he knew, like our government knows, Russia ain't got no warheads and no missiles. That's the point. So there's a couple, three examples of where they could have been used against people or cultures or war nations, and they've not been used. In fact, there's only been two nuclear weapons ever exploded in anger since 1945. That's 60 years ago, we dropped two nukes. I'm sorry, 55 and 15, yes, yeah, 70 years. 70 years ago, we dropped two nuclear bombs and none since then. Why is that? Why have they never been used since then? Why? There was an article I clipped out of the newspaper. Turkey and, India and Pakistan threatened a nuclear war, and it never came about. Why? The threat's far more important. Well, anyway, there's a couple of three examples that they could have been used, and they've never been used, and I'm contending the reason is they ain't got them. Now, let's go back to the one certain where we all know, the American people know there were missiles, and that was called the Cuban Missile Crisis. Bruce, were you there? Do you remember this at all? Do you know anything about this?
This was a little before my time, but I know it was during the JFK administration.
Good. You're absolutely right. I'm going to just read a bunch of little articles and things, and then we're going to talk about it, about the whole crisis, and then we'll talk about the INF Treaty, which will confirm, I believe, that I'm right. So let's go back down to 1961. Alan Dulles served as director of the CIA from February 1953 to November 1961. According to the Associated Press, an exaggerated fear of a Soviet nuclear missile buildup in the late 1950s put the CIA under enormous pressure to send U-2 spy flights over Soviet territory, though the spy planes never spotted a single missile. The U-2's cameras never photographed an operational ICBM in the Soviet Union because there were none beside a small number for testing, and even those didn't exist. Did you catch that? Mm-hmm. For 20, or at least from 53 to 61 or 2, there were no ICBMs. Article 1990, Associated Press. The United States and Soviet Union came to the brink of a nuclear war during the missile crisis, which resulted from the discovery in the fall of 1962 that Soviet missile launching sites were under construction in Cuba. Wait a minute. I've never heard of a missile launching site being fired and detonating a city. Have you?
No.
A missile launching site doesn't do any damage. It's intended to launch the missile. But that's all they saw. Okay? Barry Goldwater in this book with no apologies. The U-2 photographs revealed missile erectors, transporters, and I can't read my writing on the last word. Okay, here's another little article. 1963. U.S. News. Oh, I'm sorry. This is the comes last. Hold on. I got to talk about the sites themselves. I've got pictures here. Here we go. This was the San Cristobal, I think. This was called the Guanajay ICE IRBM launch site. IRBM stands for Intermediate Range Ballistic Missiles. Now, it's a straight down photograph. I would bet probably 4 or 5, maybe 15,000 feet in in the airplane, in altitude. And it's got little pieces of paper with words on it, printed. And they point to things, and they point to the control bunker, the vehicle research something, the security fence under construction, the nuclear warhead storage site, and the structures being constructed of a certain size. Now, a nuclear warhead storage site, did they see any missiles there? Nuclear warhead storage site?
Well, they should.
There's no missiles there.
Right.
Just as the storage site. There's no missiles. You can see that in the picture. That's picture number two. This is the San Cristobal one, I think. It doesn't matter. But once again, this is a much closer picture. It looks like a kind of beachy or maybe sandy area with sections of trees. I would bet maybe it's 60% vacant, nothing growing, and then the 40% is trees, but they're scattered. So there's a tree and then a 50-foot space and then another tree. And here's got, once again, more of these little white tabs, trucks under camouflage netting, missile erector, Theodite station, wherever that is, trucks under camouflage, and a missile shelter tents. Okay, now we got missile shelter tents. So they put the missiles under these shelters. Now, I hate to say this, Bruce, back in the 60s, our cameras didn't have the ability to see what was underneath the missile shelter tents. And I don't think we even do have that today. So they don't know. But they got a point there. It's called missile shelter tents. So the tents are protecting missiles. Well, obviously, we know that they do that in Russia. Therefore, if they got a tent in Cuba, they've got to have a missile underneath it. Doesn't that follow?
Mm-hmm.
No. It doesn't follow anything. Okay, here's an article. 1994, my local newspaper, Associated Press. Okay, there, here it goes, the last sentence. The U2's cameras never photographed, oh, it's a repeat of the statement I just made. There were none. He went on to say there were no ICBMs. That's something new. Okay, now, a colonel, which was the equivalent of a general in the Russian military intelligence, named Oleg Penkovsky, defected shortly after the Cuban Missile Crisis. In fact, no, I'm sorry, it was during. And in it, he wrote a book called The Penkovsky Papers. It's available. You can get, we get a copy. I've got a copy here in Tucson. And this is what he said. But as far as, this is during, he was writing this just before the Cuban Missile Crisis. But as far as launching a planned missile attack to destroy definite targets is concerned, we are not yet capable of doing that, huh? So even if they got missiles, they don't go anywhere. We simply do not have missiles that are accurate enough. Many of our big missiles are still on the drawing boards. So that's, the number one defector ever coming to the United States says there's no missiles. Oh no, wait a minute, Ralph. Now we got you. We know the missiles were withdrawn. Come on now, we know that because Kennedy guaranteed it. He insisted upon it. One of the conditions for the missile crisis ending was Kennedy agreed to get Khrushchev to agree that we would board their ships pulling these missiles out. And that we would board them and make sure the missiles were on board. To make sure the missiles were gone. So I've got, on my DVD, I show you, I think, four pictures. I've got three of them in front of me right now. We're going to read what they say. This was U.S. News Report, 1983, a couple of years later, 20 years later. 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis raises nuclear war. But here's what it says underneath it. Soviet Union moves to install nuclear missiles in Cuba. Kennedy responds with a naval quarantine of the island and issues an ultimatum. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I brought this to your attention because of the photograph, not in what it says, but I got the date, 1983. This is U.S. News now showing a picture, quote, of Cuban missiles being removed from Cuba. And it's a picture of the elevated maybe 1,000 feet or even less, maybe 500 feet over the ship, off to the right side, and there you see the tall, you know, three or four story section, and then the deck in front of it going to probably within 15 or 20 feet of the front of the ship. And there they've got three things that look like missiles, but they've only got one tail. And I'm contending, since they've got a bulb, it looks like a bulb after about, say, 8 or 10 feet, which is the cockpit, that these are airplanes. There's no wings, and no tail swings, but they're all also covered by a tarp. Now, I just pointed out that our airplanes and our cameras cannot tell what is underneath the tarp. We can't tell whether it's metal, wood, plastic, or nothing. Mm-hmm. So that's picture number one. Here's another picture. On the deck of the Soviet ship are several large, oblong, missile-like objects. They may or may not have been missiles. So once again, you can see on this picture, there's some things on the back that have got ribs. So it's, in other words, it's a platform, a base, and then they put ribs about every 2 feet and then draped a tarp over that. And that's a missile underneath. Of course, we know that they had missiles there. No, we didn't. But we know, so therefore they're removing them. They said they would, and therefore they must be, even though we have no way of verifying it. And the third picture is even more incredible. It says Soviet ship removes nuclear missiles in 1962 showdown. And what it is one object probably long enough to be an intermediate range missile, but it's got ribs and a tarp. And I'm telling you, Bruce, we never boarded one ship. If we had boarded those ships, it would have been an act of war. We never boarded the ships after the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, this was a picture in 2002 in my local newspaper, Associated Press. It shows a picture of a man called a former CIA analyst, Dino Brugioni, who interpreted American spy photographs of Soviet missiles in Cuba in 1962. And he displays the historic photos inside the building where missiles were stockpiled. Now, how does he know they were stockpiled there? And there's not one picture of a missile that I can find of any of these YouTube pictures. But do you know, he's got a picture, he's got a notebook like with those spirals, about 20 of those plastic things, and it's unfolded in front of him, and there's a picture, but you can't see what it is. And he's inside a Quonset where he knows the missiles were stored, see? Now, they store them in Russia, so they must store them in Cuba. So all Cuba's got to do is put up a storage facility, and we believe there's a missile in it, although we can't prove it. That's proof. Bruce, forgive me. Is that proof to you?
No.
Okay. Okay, now, step number three. I've got in front of me... Let's start with this, Bruce. I want you to define the word elimination for me.
To eliminate something would be to get rid of it or to destroy it.
Would you say it would obliterate it?
Yes.
So in other words, there's no more, the object will be completely eliminated, gone forever. You couldn't even reassemble it. Would you admit that? Isn't that what eliminate means?
That's correct.
Okay. Now I'm going to read. I have the U2 treaty in front of me. Bruce, you can't see that, but it's on, you'll see this particular page on my DVD. Treaty between the United States of America and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics on the elimination. What's the definition again, Bruce?
To obliterate.
Obliterate. On the obliteration of their intermediate range and shorter range missiles. Would you agree that they're going to eliminate? There's no question in your mind. We're going to eliminate it. It reduces the nuclear threat. Would you agree to that, Bruce?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's see how they eliminate the missile first. Page 172. I'm flipping pages. Maybe you can hear it. Maybe not. Here's page 172. Now, you're going to have to trust me. On my DVD, I show you this page. This is section 8. A missile subject to the treaty, meaning we're going to eliminate, shall be subject to inspection only by external visual observation. Now, let me ask you this, Bruce. Under those terms, can we touch it?
Just observe.
That's right. Can we kick it?
No.
Can we drop a metal on it, a metal magnet on it, to see that it's metal?
No.
Can we look inside?
No.
Can we cut it open?
No.
Can we drop acid on it?
No.
Can we roll it over?
No.
Why? Is that the way to eliminate? Let me tell you, I've got an article in front of me, Bruce. You've probably never heard this before. Listen to this. Just before this was signed, the LA Times and Washington Post reported, Kremlin, 200 missiles were phony. Wait a minute. They're admitting that 10%, they had 1,950 of these missiles, and 200 of them were phony? That's more than 10%. Now, would it be possible, under those terms that we just read, for them to roll out a dummy missile and eliminate that, and we believe it's real?
Yes.
Bruce, you won't believe this either, but when I was shooting my video in 1987, when I finished it, I had a crew of like 5 people, and I got them all together before we had to disassemble, and I took a little break. Let me tell you what's going to happen. Under the INF Treaty, yes, we can't verify the thing's real. Here's what's going to happen. They're going to announce, please send the media over because we're going to destroy 3 SS-20 missiles. And sure enough, CNN News, the one that I'm going to talk about, shows up. And I said, what they'll do is they'll have bleachers. And they'll get the media. Each one will have a row, and they can put their camera elevated above the guy in front of them, and the cameraman's in it. There'll be a guy on the ground, maybe a major, a colonel, or someone in the army. Say, "Okay, ladies and gentlemen, in English, we're now going to destroy three SS-20 missiles. And so I'll count down from 3, 2, 1, and then you'll see the explosion. Now, so help me, I've got it on tape. The CNN newsman there, or the guy says, here's the Roger Jones in the city where we're going. Okay, so, yeah, so Roger Jones here. I'm sitting, and you can see me. There's the major and the people in front of him on the bleachers. And there's a clear field. It's a very green kind of goes up. It's a light, slight rise, and then the horizon. And then on the left-hand side are three telephone poles, brightly painted. So the CNN news cameraman's got those three telephone poles in his camera. He thinks those are going to be the missiles. And suddenly, 3, 2, 1, and the sky explodes past the hill. Like fireworks. Beautiful white phosphorus stuff. It looks like a phosphorus. Did those cameramen see any missiles being destroyed?
No.
No. No. Gee, I said that was going to happen in 1987, and CNN News reported it. There it is in front of your very eyes. Exactly what I said. Now, they're admitting that 10% of their missiles are phony. What does that tell us? Why did we not insist on at least being able to verify the darn thing was real? Let me read you from the New York Times, 1998. This was in New York Times, which is a major source of information. Many of the huge missiles displayed in Red Square parades in the Soviet era were only dummies, but they scared the West into an expensive response, a weekly reported. One such fake, shown in 1965, parade prompted the United States to build an anti-missile defense system worth billions of dollars, said the magazine. Wait a minute. Those missiles, maybe you've seen them. They don't have May Day parades anymore, but to show the might of the military, they paraded these missiles that are probably 60, 80 feet long on wheels behind them and a truck pulling them.
Yeah.
And you could see as they were moving, the darn things were hollow and made out of probably one layer of metal. And they bounced on the brick road. And I said to myself, those things have got, here's the New York Times admitting they're phony. Now, let's talk about the SS. Okay, now we know that the. Let me give you one more evidence that we don't know that the missile even exists. One of the missiles they were going to destroy, these intermediates, was the SS-20. There was. I've got an article. I didn't bring it out. I couldn't find it, but it's in my DVD. Secretary of State Shultz was debating Senator Sims about the treaty before it was voted on, and Sims says we've never seen an SS-20. And Schultz, well, he kind of went, well, yeah, but we're taking the word for it. Our intelligence says they've got, okay. Now, this is from Jane's All the World's Airplanes, which is the major source in England of knowing who's got airplanes, missiles, soldiers, etc. And in this article, in their magazine, I've got a copy of it, they showed an SS-20. Because they were showing all of the various missiles they got, and they showed the SS-20, but underneath, it's a drawing, and it says, artist's concept of the SS-20. They were going to destroy 440 of these things, and we've never seen one. And the Janes can't get a picture of them, but we're going to destroy them. Could that very well be the reason that we can't do anything except visually observe the missile? Could that be possible that they didn't have any intermediate range missiles? Does that fit the evidence? Bruce, please.
Yeah. Yes.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, no, yeah, but no. They could destroy some missiles but have other missiles that will launch the warheads. We're going to have to destroy those warheads. So let's now read from page 36 of the INF Treaty that Reagan and Gorbachev signed. 36. You'll have to trust me. Paragraph 2, Section 8, whatever it is, states that before a missile arrives at the elimination facility, define the word elimination again, Bruce.
Obliterate.
Okay, remove from existence, right?
Yes.
So we're going to obliterate eliminate the obliteration facility. Before it arrives, its nuclear warhead device and guidance element may be removed. Nuclear warhead devices and guidance elements are not required to be eliminated. Bruce, what's the word eliminate mean?
To destroy or obliterate.
Okay. So they may be removed before they're destroyed or obliterated, because destroying them would be meaningless unless the manufacture of new such items was also prohibited. Also, since warheads are small, verifying compliance with such a prohibition would be extremely difficult. Huh? Bruce, did Russia destroy any of their intermediate range missiles? Can we verify that?
No.
Did we destroy any? They destroy any warheads?
We can't verify it.
No. Was there anybody there to even look or snuck in? No. Now, wait a minute. Gorbachev and Reagan signed this treaty. Why would they sign a treaty like that? Did Reagan know that they didn't have warheads and missiles? Yes. That's the only reason he would sign it. If he knew they were real and read what it said, he'd say, wait a minute. We're not signing this. You're not eliminating any warheads or any missiles. We can't verify whatever you destroy as being real. And your warheads are not going to be destroyed. What's the purpose of signing this? But Reagan and Gorbachev sat down at a table and signed it. And then the Senate ratified it. Now, I'll give you my own personal experience. I live in Tucson, Arizona, and I went from the first grade all the way through college. It took me 47 years to do that. No, Bruce, that's not true. I just made that up. But anyway, I got through all the way through college. And about in the seventh grade, I met a young man named Dennis DeConcini. A name might ring a bell, maybe not. He was our senator for three terms from the 70s and 80s, I guess, and Clinton, I think, so through the 80s. He's now retired and a classmate of mine. So I knew him from the ninth grade all the way through the University of Arizona. We were not real close friends, but we'd bump into each other on the well, hi, Dennis. Hi, Ralph. What you doing? And I'd walk on. That was the end of it. So Dennis is our senator. So Dennis has a public meeting because he wants to be representative of what we want him to do. So Ralph, little Ralphie goes to the microphone, 300 people in the audience, and I say, Dennis, Ralph Epperson. He said, I haven't seen you. And I said, yeah, I know, Dennis. Listen, did you vote on the INF treaty? Oh, absolutely. Did you vote? Yes, yes, I did indeed. Did you read the treaty? No. I said, Dennis, why didn't you read it? He said, I trusted Ronald Reagan. I said, Dennis, maybe you didn't know this after 16 years or even during the time you were there, but Ronald Reagan was one of those dreaded Republicans, and you're one of those neat Democrats, and you should never trust a Republican because we know how scurrilous they are. Why didn't you read it? Well, I just trusted it that it was. I said, Dennis, I have it in front of me. I'll show it to you after the meeting if you'd like to read it. And I read those two sections. And Dennis said, thanks very much for coming, Ralph. Next. Do you understand? I cannot say that 99 others didn't read it, but I read it, and I read what it said. I just read it to you. Mm-hmm. And Bruce, as an impartial observer, would you, maybe you're doing it to please me, but would you admit that we didn't eliminate any warheads?
Yes.
Also admit that we at least can't verify that whatever they did destroy was real?
That's right.
Okay. Now the last question is, why would we agree to a treaty like that?
Yeah.
Because they ain't got them. I've tried to convince you that the reason, if Billy Clinton is right, that there's an international conspiracy that already controls the nations of the world, why would they risk getting nuked and their property getting nuked? That doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Now we not... Oh, one more thing. Got another minute?
Yes.
Okay. There's a thing called HAARP. Maybe you've heard about it.
Right.
You probably have. Maybe you've had people on to talk about it.
Right.
There's a series of antennas up in Alaska someplace. Have you heard about this?
Yes.
Okay, so you know. You're confirming then that there's a thing called HAARP, right?
Correct.
That thing is extremely powerful. What's his name? The PhD, somebody that wrote about it.
Nick Begich.
Begich, yes. And Begich claims to be a PhD. He documented that it was real. And the wrestler who was the governor.
Jesse Ventura.
Ventura went there, took pictures of it, flew over and everything else. Begich later admitted that they've increased the power by 100. Now let me tell you this. Reagan claimed that the reason it was built was to prevent missiles from coming in from Russia. But if Reagan knew there were no missiles coming in from Russia, why would he build it? Well, to give her the pretense that you Americans are safe. Don't worry, we got you covered, at least from the missiles coming from the East Coast. And, you know, their West Coast, their East Coast and our West Coast, yeah, will stop them. It's never been, to my knowledge, ever been used, but boy, it could have. And if Reagan knew, like I know, and like Gorbachev knew, and even Dennis should have known, there were no missiles in Russia, and even General Penkovsky knew, and even the Cubans, Bobby Kennedy and John Kennedy, knew there were no missiles in Cuba, and even the Cubans knew there were. I've talked to Cubans down at the time. They saw none, no missiles, no warheads, nothing. They saw Russian soldiers floating, driving around and doing things, but they have no way of knowing what was going on. They never saw a missile either. So that's at least a partial resume, a review of why there are no missiles except in the United States.
Wow. Ralph, I want to thank you so much for joining us this week. And people can go to your website, Ralph-Epperson. That's Ralph-Epperson, Epperson. Again, that's Ralph-Epperson.com. And you can find out all of Ralph's information, including his books and DVDs. Ralph, thank you so much for joining us this week, and we'll have you back.
Thank you very much, Bruce. My pleasure.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bruce Collins at The Bruce Collins Show. Thank you so much for joining us each and every week, Fridays at midnight on WWPR 1490 AM. We would ask that you would support all of your favorite charities that help to spread the gospel, clothe the needy, and feed the hungry. You can do that as thanks for listening to our program. We ask of no monetary payback from you, only your listenership and your dedication to making the world a better place. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoy the show. Just wanted to let all friends of The Bruce Collins Show and the Revolving Door Radio Program know that Chad Miles is the webmaster at Conspiria.net. Check out Conspiria.net today. I want to thank our guest this week, Ralph Epperson, for joining us. In 1989, I came across Ralph Epperson's book, The Unseen Hand, in the Brentano's bookstore at the Valley Fair Mall in Santa Clara, California. Now, I didn't know who Ralph Epperson was, but I read his book, I was engrossed with it, and it blew my mind, quite frankly. And then over the years, I started to get back into more mainstream topics, and then came back to it within the last 15 years. I think Y2K changed a lot of things for a lot of us, and September 11th. Nonetheless, I've sort of gone full circle again, where I look at things skeptically, except for my faith in Jesus Christ, although I believe that I once looked at that skeptically, and now I walk in faith, thanks to what Jesus Christ has done in my life. But the evidence is there to point to the authenticity of God's Word, the Bible, and to the existence of Jesus Christ and to the evidence of Jesus Christ in what he has done in people's lives for 2,000 years now. But when I look at conspiracies, I do now look at them somewhat skeptically. So the evidence presented this week, I want to make it clear that I'm not necessarily saying that this evidence is true. But I do think it's interesting and compelling. And there's one thing I can say about Ralph Epperson. He doesn't do what he does for the money. He does it because he believes that what he is saying is true. Now, as believers, we know that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. And one thing that I think is very important in these days, because things have gotten a little bit crazy, is that we remember our identity in Jesus Christ. This will help us to walk honestly and truthfully in the things that we do. Romans 8:37 says, "Yet in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loves us." And there lies our identity and what we should be believing in today. You can break the power of all the lies in your life that say you're not good enough, that say you can't do it, by declaring your identity in Christ. You can say that you're a child of God. You can say you're healed, you're forgiven, you're righteous and holy in Jesus Christ. Instead of believing the devil's lies, who's the accuser of the brethren, and when he uses these things, he will use them against you, you can speak your true identity in Jesus Christ. You can say, "Father, thank you that one declaration of truth about who I really am in Christ has the power to break a stronghold that has held me for years and years. I'm declaring my identity in Jesus right now. I'm your child. I belong to Jesus, who bought me at the cost of his life on Calvary. I'm healed, forgiven, righteous, and holy in him. Amen." And it's not because of what you've done or what you're doing. It's because of what he did 2,000 years ago. Praise God for that. Again, I want to thank Ralph Epperson so much for being our guest this week, as he has been many weeks on the Bruce Collins Show. You can go into past archives of the Bruce Collins Show and see that Ralph has joined us time and time again with these fascinating conspiratorial topics. Again, I'm not necessarily saying that all, some, or any of them are true, but I do believe that Ralph Epperson has looked into these topics more than I have, and he sincerely believes all the things that he presents. Again, you can find out more information about Ralph Epperson at ralph-epperson.com. And I want to thank you, take the time to thank you for joining us every week right here at ipbn-fm.com and WWPR 1490 AM for the Bruce Collins Show. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us here at the Bruce Collins Show, where you can find us every Friday night at midnight here at WWPR 1490 AM. Remember, God loves you. We do too. Don't give up.